Okay.
So, yes.
Can you hear me okay with that? Cool. All right. So, I am going to be talking to you today about effective policy change. So, over the last 13,000 or so years of human history, our social organization is becoming increasingly complex. So, started out as hunter-gatherers, and over the last 13,000 years, we've worked our way through various stages of social organization to today, where we have modern nation states. Now, when you have larger groups of people, when you have more social complexity, you end up with coordination problems. So these are problems where you have to coordinate the efforts and resources of a large number of people. Things like, you know, building large religious monuments, or maybe sort of irrigation systems, road networks, things like that. Maybe also having a large standing army, so you can defend yourself in times of strife, or maybe you can go out and conquer neighbouring territories to expand yours. So all of these require a political solution. They're very large, complex problems, and so the solution has inevitably been politics. So basically every modern nation state organises itself using politics, and whether the political structure is small and laissez-faire and sort of hands-off, or whether it's large and intrusive or interventionist, obviously most nation states are somewhere in between those two extremes, but politics is sort of a fact of life. So EA has a lot of advice for us as individuals. We can choose an effective charity and donate to it. We can think about our career options and try and have the most effective career. We can promulgate these ideas and so that other individuals can engage with them. But when we start to think about bigger problems, so problems that other people have raised here, I think we start to get into this realm of where we have coordination problems, and that actually probably the only way that we're going to see a lot of headway on them is by engaging with the political process. So things like, you know, existential risk, things like, global pandemic, or what about things like making sure that people can, you know, overcome their biases and become happier and healthier individuals. Things like addressing the causes of disease and poverty rather than just the symptoms. Now, some of these problems are likely to go away by themselves, the world will change. Some of them will have really innovative and advanced technological solutions that will make them things of the past. So you can think of advances in medical science as being part of this. But many will not. And so I think that that a lot of these problems, and whether it's the problems that I've raised today or other problems that you see in your community or in the larger world, they're going to require a political solution. So politics is messy, and I think a lot of people have this kind of internal resistance to wanting to engage with it. It's full of compromise, it's full of bastardry, it's full of bad intentions. No one has a good word to say about anyone who engages with it. But I think that we can really not afford to ignore it as a movement, because I think the potential for doing good there is really high. So I think... we should. I'm here to basically advocate that we start thinking about political solutions to some of these problems. So now, as you know, my current role is in the communications director of Giving What We Can. But my background is actually in politics. I've talked to a few of you here about this. But so I used to work for, I'm sure most of you have, the former finance minister and current shadow trade minister, Penny Wong. I was on the team that was campaigning in the South Australian state election in 2014, which we somehow won. We had a great campaign. But that's Jay Weatherall was the premier in South Australia. I was working for him. I've worked for a few other South Australian politicians. Before that, I was sort of a party activist working on political campaigns, election campaigns, that sort of thing. So most of my adult life, I've actually worked in politics. Now, I guess my political start probably came when I was about 15 years old. And at high school, I started a little activist organisation. And we did things like we printed up badges, decrying the Iraq War. So it gives you some idea of how long ago this was. We put banners from a... like an overpass in Adelaide, and you can see it's very clever. It's the Liberal Party logo, but you see what we've done? You see what we've done? And honk out Howard, get the motorists to lean on their horn. By this point, you can probably tell what my political persuasions are. I hope that you won't hold them against me. Obviously, politics is quite a tribal thing, and if you have different political predilections, I hope that you'll put them aside while you're listening to me. I hope this advice is sort of fairly universal. But anyway, I think this was something that you could say we probably didn't achieve very much with this kind of activism. I don't know if anyone remembers the outcome of the 2004 federal election, but Mark Latham made a fairly inauspicious exit from Australian politics, and John Howard went on to be the longest serving Prime Minister in Australia's history since Rob Menzies. So you could say that we didn't necessarily achieve that much with our activism. But the thing is, we had a lot of fun doing it. And we really enjoyed it, and we really felt like we were doing something. Now, I think we can probably make some parallels here between sort of that kind of political action and some sort of less effective altruism, we might say. So we know that $300 billion is donated in the United States, or thereabouts, every year, and that's actually about the size of the Australian federal budget. So, for context, the World Health Organization's budget is about $4 billion. Bill and Melinda Gates releases about $4 billion in bequests every year. So, you could think about the scale of what we could achieve with $300 billion. But we know that often that's locally focused projects within the United States. And so, the effect of that money is to not do very much. And in a sense, I think it's that people are using because it's really difficult to know what makes a difference, and it's really difficult to sort of see through all the various different charities, and obviously that's what something like Giving What We Can is designed to alleviate. But people generally just use giving to charity as a proxy for making a difference. And in the same way, I, as a 15-year-old, and I think a lot of other activists, tend to use this thing of making some noise as a proxy for making a difference. And it's difficult to tell whether that actually does achieve very much. So my advocacy today, I guess, is that I think we can probably achieve better results rather than standing on the outside and shouting, although that might be part of an effective campaign. But the crux of it should be that we work within the system and we engage with the current political process and try and use it to our advantage in order to effect some policy change. Now, some of this stuff might seem kind of obvious. It might seem obvious to those of you who either have a policy background or just have thought about it for a while, that I think many activists, many people who want to engage in a sort of political change don't necessarily engage with the process itself and engage with the reality that you do need to engage with the process in order to affect substantial long-term change. So just bear with me if it does seem like some of this stuff is a little bit obvious. As we've heard from other speakers, knowing what the right course of action is one thing, but actually being able to transform that into action is definitely another. And sometimes you get really excited about an idea and you run off in one direction. And I'm saying, consider a few other options, maybe take a pause for thought and try and engage with a few different ways of making a difference. So just sort of thinking about this, let's say that there's an idea that you have which you think is really important and you think it's going to change the world. It needs a political solution, so you need to turn it into legislation. So this is generally, the direction that you're wanting things to go. Now, of course, this simple model here is definitely not just how it happens. Doesn't just go like that. So I guess first thing that I'll do is walk you through kind of some of the different steps in the process that an idea takes from being a thought bubble in your head to being legislation that's binding on citizens and that informs the actions of departments. So, like I said, you're starting out with an idea. The idea could come from, a think tank, a researcher, an academic. It could come from, a campaign in the public space, so through the media. Could come from just like a concerned individual. Often ideas for public policy come from other politicians. So if they're not coming from within the government, they might be suggested by politicians' colleagues on the backbenches or from a crossbencher. So in this case, you're the person with the idea. The next step from taking it from idea to legislation is to go to a minister. So minister heads up a department, has an area of portfolio responsibility. And basically what happens is the minister, you go into the minister's office, you try and convince them that your policy is really, really important. Not only is it going to save their department money, it's going to be great for their political career, but it's also going to, you know, change Australia or change the world. It's cost effective. It's got all these great things going for it. So, you make your best pitch to the minister, and if they're convinced, maybe they send it off to a department. So a department will have a look at it, and they'll basically sanity check your policy idea against the sort of what else the government is doing. So contextualise it within current government policy, work out what the budgetary implications of it are, work out whether it intersects with other policy ideas that are currently in the department, whether it's duplicating stuff that's already been done, whether it's been tried before. And so the department will put together a briefing which sort of summarises the ideas and then come up with a recommendation to the minister. And so they send that back to the minister, and the minister can either accept the recommendation or reject it. And if they accept it and it's a positive recommendation, then you might move on to the next step. But of course, the department could always come back and say, actually, looking at this idea, it's completely crazy and there's no way we could fund it and it's completely pie in the sky and we're not interested. And anyway, we tried it before and it was a complete disaster. So don't do this. So assuming that doesn't happen, assuming the minister wants to push it further forward, then they have to introduce it to Cabinet. So Cabinet is the sort of deliberative body of all the ministers. So that's all the government ministers, or most of them in the federal government, who come together and they make sort of whole of government decisions on policy. So it's not just up to the minister of a particular department, it's up to all the ministers to say yay or nay to a particular sort of way forward with the policy. And they might raise objections, like maybe the policy conflicts with something that's happening in their department, or maybe they're already doing something in this space. Maybe they think that the programs that you're going to have to cut to fund your policy aren't worth cutting, so they're not prepared to fund the new policy. But after there's some debate in Cabinet and the Cabinet votes on this, maybe it goes further on. So Cabinet takes the policy, sends it off to a parliamentary draftsperson, they turn it into a bill, and then they send it off to Parliament, which is probably the sort of part of this process that most people are familiar with. And so Parliament, obviously, you know, most of you know it through question time, but there is also just a lot of discussing and debating policy. And so Parliament is obviously composed not just of the party of government. So in the lower house, you